Welcome in to the Devi Devotional Podcast, a show devoted to all things Devi and C2C. Hosted by John Arrington and Aaron Wilcox, this dynamic duo brings you actionable strategies with player-driven analysis for your Devi and C2C leagues. Let's dive in.
Uh-oh, our cameras are screwed up. Let's dive into the NFL draft. Sorry about that one. I did not do that right. But welcome into the Devi Devotional, where we stay devoted to Devi. I'm your host, Dynasty Coach A, joined as always by Aaron Wilcox at AaronWilcox86 on Twitter. And tonight, like I said, we're going to be diving into all things NFL draft. Something that I will be flying to tomorrow morning. I'm pretty damn excited about that. And, you know, but there's obviously reasons to be excited, even if you're not going. There's so much going on. Dynasty players, Devi players, everyone is just, you know, all about the NFL draft right now. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, getting into some rookie talk, some strategy discussion, everything about it. But first, how are you doing, Aaron?
You know, I'm doing well, and it's just hitting me now that like the draft week is actually here. This is happening. All of these players that we've been following for now years, they're going to actually get their shot here to be drafted, go to an actual NFL team, and hopefully have some success. So it's always fun to talk about these players and these rookies specifically, especially since we haven't talked about them for quite some time. It's been months really since we've done a rookie specific podcast on the Devi Devotional here. So I'm excited to hear your thoughts here, John, and we're going to go into some strategy and players today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've done a pretty good job of being a Devi podcast, you know, in recent months. So, you know, we've obviously talked about these rookies and these players for quite some time, not every single one of them, but, you know, it's probably a good time to go ahead and get back into it real quick before the NFL draft. And then obviously before our rookie drafts. I don't know about, you know, the listeners. I know Aaron's in a few of my leagues. I'm in one of his, and all of my leagues start on Sunday, the rookie draft. So, I mean, the draft ends, you know, Saturday. You have like, what, 12 hours or something like that to figure out who the hell you want to draft. And then next thing you know, we're drafting, and I used to stagger them like one per day or whatever. Now screw it. It's every draft starts right on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And I mean, we do a 24-hour clock and all that, but yeah, I'm pretty excited about that, but I'm going to be flying back in that morning. So, you know, it's going to be a busy day to say the least. And Toronto Dave's in the chat with In Beth We Trust. And there's no more important time than right now to trust In Beth. So why don't we start by doing that? And, you know, obviously beyond just trusting In Beth, Aaron, what are you doing to prepare for rookie drafts, prepare for the NFL draft, you know, and all that kind of stuff? Like, what are you doing around this time of year to get ready for everything that's going on in your dynasty leagues, Devi leagues, and so on?
Yeah. So if you are a Devi or Campus to Canton specific player, maybe you don't focus as much in on just the rookies this time of year. You're looking at the college players. I kind of go back and I do a little bit of a more thorough sweep of, well, have these guys' profiles really changed a lot? Like, for example, this most recent year oftentimes is the most important year, the final year for these prospects, and we really need to pay attention to that. So ultimately figure out like who are the most talented guys and the most productive in the class, and kind of field out or at least sort out like, did they test well? How is this pre-draft process going? Are there injury concerns? Are there other concerns? Things like that. And then just keeping in mind, you know, in anticipation for the NFL draft, we don't just abandon all of our process pre-draft wise once the NFL draft happens and these guys get first round draft capital. Like, we should not do that, but it happens every year. Guys get pumped up who don't deserve to go early in rookie drafts, who are not necessarily very good NFL talents, but hey, some team liked them. They are going to cause these guys to go way up in value. And I don't want, you know, any of these listeners tonight to overreact to that. I don't want anybody to fall for that trap that seems to happen every year.
I think that's the biggest thing is every year there's these players that just come out of nowhere, and yet people freak out and they lose their minds and they draft him in like the late first or early second or whatever. We have some risers in previous drafts here that we can talk about real quick. Jonathan Mingo obviously comes to mind from last year, where he was going as the 35th overall player in April ADP from DLF. And then after the NFL draft in May ADP, he was now 16th overall. What? You know, just because he got drafted in the second round of the NFL draft. That didn't make him a good player. And obviously, you know, it literally did not make him a good player. So we can say that with 100% certainty, even though we were saying that back then, too. You know, there was obviously naysayers and you know, people that were going to believe no matter what. And unfortunately, they lost out. Sky Moore went from, in 2022, went from an ADP of 16th overall in April to an ADP of 9th overall in May. I mean, those people are kicking themselves right now. I mean, it's not the end of the world. You didn't waste a 101 or whatever, but I mean, that hurts. You're drafting them at 9th overall. I know some people that I know personally who will remain nameless that no one on this pod, obviously, but that will remain nameless that drafted Sky Moore 6th overall in a couple of rookie drafts. And like, they are just hating life right now. I can pretty much guarantee you that. Alec Pierce.
That is not fun. No, I was just going to say, that's not fun. And you're going to name like Alec Pierce as another guy, like, again, not a first rounder, but it's like these guys just rise and their profiles do not warrant that at all.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, there's plenty of players in this draft, and we can sit here and talk about every single one. But I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that there's players that are going to be that are going 35th overall right now that all of a sudden are going to be going 20th overall or 15th overall or whatever in a few days, and just don't do it. Like, it's really simple. I can't really think of too many times where it made sense to all of a sudden draft a guy that high just because he got drafted like super early. Like, you know, Kadarius Toney obviously comes to mind. Like, there's so many players. There's so many times where we go, it doesn't work out. But then, you know, you'll have people saying like, oh, well, you know, what about Xavier Worthy this year? Xavier Worthy is a great prospect. He is a solid prospect. He's not some guy coming out of nowhere. So like him running a 4.21 at the combine and all that stuff, that's great. But that's not like a Jonathan Mingo getting drafted in the second round and jumping from 35th to whatever. Xavier Worthy's always been in the mix for, you know, for that. So like you know, people talk about, oh, well, just because he's fast, you know, like he's going to be a bust and yada, yada, yada. But like, that's not the same as these terrible prospects that all of a sudden just get, you know, jump up into the, like the high end draft spots and you don't want to take them.
For sure. And like CEH, I mean, when he went to the Chiefs there in the first and everybody overreacted and they slid him ahead of especially Jonathan Taylor. Like that was, you know, kind of the consensus RB1 in the class for a while, but then CEH started to slide in ahead of him. And there were other talented backs in that class. Like not all of them have worked out, like DeAndre Swift and Dobbins and Akers. And there's some injuries at play there too, for how that class has aged. But I mean, that I think is a great example too of a guy just rising too much just due to the NFL draft and the landing spot too. But I think that at the end of the day, we need to react somewhat to the NFL draft because landing spot, yes, that matters. And I think the draft capital has to matter to some degree, but a lot of times it's more that negative, like Kayshon Boutte or like Zach Evans, like they kept falling and falling and no team wanted them. And, you know, there's just something to that that I think that we got to pick up on and for sure react to. Landing spot, past that, I guess, landing spot and ability to earn playing time and develop. I mean, those are good things to keep in mind, but sometimes we aren't the best at accurately predicting, like, what is a good landing spot? Like, we thought the Houston Texans, you know, meh landing spot. And it's like, they ended up being awesome because Stroud is awesome. So, I mean, Tank Dell, not only was he kind of slept on because of, you know, size and all these other things, is, you know, he's kind of a later breakout type of guy who went to JUCO, but like, we also didn't think that Houston Texans would be this sexy landing spot. So, I guess we do have to matter, or we do have to understand that draft capital and landing spot, all those things matter, but we'll go back to how we initially started off this pod and say talent is the thing that matters the most. Really make sure that we got our models or your analysis that you can trust in going into this NFL draft.
Yeah, and we got FF Tyler O in the chat, and he's talking about my clock in the back, and that never gets old. And you know, it's like 99% of the time the time's not even accurate on it. I have no idea why I have this clock in my room, but I do. I think the important thing, the important lesson to learn, to keep in mind, whatever you want to say, is, you know, tier-based drafting is the most important thing. And I think if you build your tiers before the NFL draft, then you can make adjustments, slight adjustments based on landing spots, based on draft capital. But, you know, for the most part, you're going to keep those guys in those tiers. There's only going to be like the very rare occurrence of, you know, like Sam Howell comes to mind, where, you know, I think most people had him as like a, you know, a first round pick, like maybe a late first round pick, early second round pick in the rookie draft, something around there, until he got drafted in the fifth round of the NFL draft. But that was an extreme. People were expecting him to be drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. He gets drafted in the fifth. Okay, so now we can make an adjustment. But, you know, if a guy is projected to go at 37th overall in the NFL draft and he goes at 45 overall, we don't need to make some giant swing or anything like that. So, you know, like that's when you can move within your tiers, but, you know, you already have that. So, like, I'm not going to move a Jonathan Mingo up, you know, into 16th overall in my rankings just because he got drafted in the second round. I don't care. Like, he was, you know, he was so low for me that him getting drafted in the second round literally did nothing for me. Like, I should probably bring up my ranks, but I mean, I want to say he was still like my 30th player or something like that, even after the draft capital and all that. So I think that's just the important part, is if you are able to, whether you do it yourself, you have your own process, or you trust ours or whoever else, if you trust somebody, yourself or someone else, and just trust in that process, and just don't drastically change it after that. But I think it is important to go ahead and start that process now. Don't wait until the draft to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like we've already mentioned Mingo a bunch, but I mean, Jonathan Mingo, he went to this landing spot that we thought would be good. Like Bryce Young is going there and he's like the only option in town. And then we realize, wait, Mingo was never good. Or I guess people should have realized that a lot sooner, that's for sure. But I appreciate Tyler's question here. He wants to know, like, the most likely guy to jump a tier, or... Well, yeah, we could start with that one. I don't know if anybody like jumped to my mind when I heard that.
I'm thinking Jalen Polk.
Polk.
Yeah. I mean, especially obviously, I don't expect him to go first round, 32nd overall to the Chiefs like Peter Schrager, predicted. But I do think he's going to go higher than people think. And I feel like people are just kind of like iffy. They don't know what to think about Jalen Polk right now. He was obviously behind Rome Odunze, and he was also like, I don't want to say behind, but like playing with, Jalen McMillan as well. And so he's not the sexiest name as far as, you know, if you're just looking at overall production and that kind of thing. The numbers aren't going to fly off the page, but he has a lot. He hits a lot of efficiency metrics that I love to see from players. And, you know, even you get into some of the film grinders, you know, that I've listened to, and they talk about how he has probably the best hands in the draft and this and that. And, you know, like, just, it seems like everyone seems to like him. So if he gets a good landing spot, if he gets earlier draft capital than we're expecting, I feel like he could make a pretty big jump. Like, I just had a rookie draft that ended like almost before I even got on this pod, and Polk went like the middle of the third. But I really think he could get into the second round in rookie drafts. And I would assume that that's kind of jumping a tier. But I feel like that would be one. Like, he's already there for me. So it's not like... this isn't me telling you he should go from third to second because of draft capital and all that kind of stuff. I'm saying I already have him in my second, but I feel like people are going to catch up to that.
Yeah, and certainly if he gets that first round draft capital, which, I mean, that's a long shot, but like you said, it's been mocked out there. he could certainly jump up. And I think Javon Baker, UCF wide receiver, I think is another one too. A lot of folks are starting to kind of slot him in earlier and earlier into their ranks, but it's not a consensus take at this point. But I think definitely strong potential for him to go day two at the NFL draft here. I mean, I don't know if you think it's a lock, but I mean, I think there's a strong likelihood of it. And he's just shown steady improvement after being a really solid recruit to Alabama, just really strong numbers. And then his film is also pretty impressive. I know he doesn't have like the most complete route tree, and there's a few things like that, but I mean, Javon Baker is a good player. I think he's had some strong reviews from those who really study his film, plus the analytical side of things too.
Yeah, and for running backs, I'm thinking Audric Estime could be another one that kind of jumps back up, because he was, you know, I think he was somewhat highly regarded by people until the NFL Combine, and then he just, people wrote him off their boards. Well, now, if, you know, the NFL teams know that he's one of the most productive running backs in all of college the past couple of years. Like, I don't think that Combine is going to completely kill him or anything like that. And, you know, whereas with wide receivers and quarterbacks and tight ends, whatever, I don't care as much about the landing spot and draft capital, but with running backs, you know, it is pretty important. So, I mean, if he goes to a spot that's, you know, that's fairly open, wide open, whatever, I feel like he could jump another, you know, jump back up to where people probably originally had him. But I mean, right now, you know, people are like, you know, draft him in the fourth rounds and stuff like that, where I think he could get back into the third or maybe even in the second, depending on where he lands and that kind of thing. Cause people just kind of want to write him off right now. But I mean, well, like, once again, he is one of the most, if not the most productive running back in this draft class.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair shout out. And there's a number of running backs who could jump up right now. It's a bit murky, and I'm excited to get into some specific players here with you too.
Tyler has another question. Who's a guy you think you and an NFL team will be far off on? And I mean, I'm taking it as, you know, like they're going to be way too high on a certain player or way too low or whatever it might be. Do you have like anyone in mind?
Yeah, like A.D. Mitchell, like immediately kind of comes to mind, very much like a first round possibility. We'll see what happens with Brian Thomas. I mean, I don't know if I'm not low on him by any means, but I think that, you know, if he goes in the first, people will be slotting him in maybe as like a clear like wide receiver four in this class. Just depends, I guess, who you're talking to. But I think I'd be slightly off there. But there's going to be lots of guys. Xavier Leggett, I mean, South Carolina wide receiver. He could rise the same way that Mingo did. I think people will learn that lesson a little bit just because the similarities are so strong there between Leggett and Mingo from the year prior. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like Jermaine Burton, we'll see how high he goes. I guess I don't know if he's actually going to go. Like, he'll probably just go day two sometime, and I'll probably be fine with that. I mean, I don't think he's a bad shot for an NFL team, but for your fantasy team, I'm not expecting him to be like this reliable like wide receiver one for the immediate future for fantasy. So we'll see on Jermaine Burton. Yeah,
he's starting to get some hype. I think for me, like, I don't believe that A.D. Mitchell is this like amazing prospect or anything like that, but I will at least give teams credit that he is a prototypical X size and speed and everything. So like, I will give teams credit for that. The one that I think I'm the most like off of as far as like where I think he's going to go in the NFL draft and where I would take him and all that is going to be Ladd McConkey. You know, like it's just a slot receiver. I get that he's athletic and all that kind of stuff, but he's a slot receiver with medical issues, back and ankle issues, I believe it is. And so, I mean, he has question marks, and he's 100% slot receiver. There's people out there saying he can be an outside guy. I watched him at the Senior Bowl. Like, he cannot be an outside guy. Like, he cannot beat press. It is not possible for him. And it's just not his game. Like, he was a slot receiver. Like, that's what he did. And in fact, I've heard other people talking about, you know, like if you watch, I want to say it's Corey Pereira from campstocanton.com and from the Back to Debbie pod. I want to say it was him that was talking about how like he just really doesn't do well tracking the ball and running like deeper routes and stuff like that. So it doesn't seem to be his game. But yet people are going to sit here and talk about how he can be a wide receiver one and this and that and draft him at the end of the first in your rookie drafts. And I don't think he should go in the first round of the NFL draft. I don't think he should go in the first round of your rookie drafts. So like I would definitely say he's probably the biggest one where I think there's a big discrepancy where how I feel about him and how others in the NFL feel about him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good choice there. I would say that Ladd McConkey certainly is. I guess his game is concerning because I think in a part-time role, he's going to be very efficient, very effective. But is he going to ever be a guy like that's just consistently dominating targets in an offense? And I just don't know about that.
Yeah. So, you know, like we've kind of dissed some people here and we talked about a couple of guys that we like or anything, but in the first round, obviously, there's the obvious players, you know, the first four quarterbacks in basically any order, however, you know, people are feeling about them. We're hearing J.J. McCarthy talk in the second overall in the NFL draft right now. So, you know, like there's some crazy stuff that can and may happen. But as far as rookie drafts, you know, you have those four quarterbacks, then you have your three big wide receivers. Beyond that, once you, and then we'll even take Brock Bowers out of it. So beyond that, once you have those eight players gone, you're at 109. Who's that player that you just love and like you have to have if you're sitting there at 109 and those guys are gone?
I actually have been kind of falling out of love with that slot. Not because I necessarily like hate the players there. I'm actually still very okay with picking in the late first, but it's just like I really want to just package somehow to get up and get a Malik Nabers, get a Marvin Harrison Jr. or any of the top four quarterbacks there. I mean, that would be awesome. At the end of the day, I mean, I still am favoring like Xavier Worthy, Texas wide receiver there. That could be a pretty solid option. Whoever of these running backs, we'll go through them here in a minute. Those guys stick out. It's definitely for me, it's not going to be like another quarterback. It's not going to be a Penix. It's not going to be a Nix, even if they somehow get first round draft capital, which I think is unlikely at this point. But yeah, I mean, I have to consider a guy like even a Brian Thomas as well, which I talked about earlier. Like there are some holes to his profile, but I mean, at the end of the day, he's still a very intriguing player.
Yeah, and I love Worthy, so you don't have to tell me twice about that. How do you feel? Like I've been a big proponent of I have Worthy over Odunze. I have no issues talking about that. Obviously, I completely understand that I don't have to take him there. I don't have to take him ahead of Odunze. I understand that. But if I'm making my ranks, I have Xavier Worthy over Odunze. But then I'm hearing, you know, I just hear every single podcast, article, whatever, is talking about how if Rome Odunze was in any other rookie class, he would be the wide receiver one in that class. But I started thinking about it beyond last year. I think last year might have been the only time that I would really say you have a decent argument there. You know, JSN missed a full year. Jordan Addison kind of had a weird college, career and everything. Didn't quite put up the production in his junior season and everything that we would have loved to see. I wouldn't really mind Odunze as the wide receiver one there, even though I can't guarantee that I would have put him there. But get into the previous classes before that. Like, he's not going ahead of Garrett Wilson. He's not going ahead of Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, like these CeeDee Lamb. Like, where the hell are we getting this? Rome Odunze would have been the wide receiver one in any other class. Like, get the hell out of here. It's just like people heard it one time and then everyone's like, yep, that's what we're going to run with. Like, maybe one class in the past, like, I don't know, 8 years that you can say he would have been the wide receiver one in. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is kind of crazy. And I like Odunze fine, but he's actually not in the same tier as like Marvin Harrison Jr. or Neighbors for me. And I don't know that he is for you. So it's just one of those deals where those guys are a tier up, like they're clearly ahead. So I think, you know, cheating with your question, you asked like after the top three wide receivers, like, I mean, Odunze is, if he's there at, let's say like the late first, yeah, you got to go with him. But like, I mean, Worthy is right there. And I guess we'll go back to Xavier Worthy because some of the arguments that you'll see as, you know, I mean, I guess, yeah, just arguments or detractions from his game. I mean, it's just the size. It's a big one that you'll hear all the time. And I truthfully think that he was not prioritizing gaining weight because he was trying to run super fast. I mean, at the end of the day, if he's 165 pounds right now, you know that he was not bulking to run a time that fast. That's ridiculous. He's going to get bigger. And with this smaller wide receiver age that we're seeing Tank Dell, we're seeing even the slim guys like Devonta Smith, and those guys are succeeding in today's NFL. It's not as much of a death knell as it was before. So I think at the end of the day, the size is a little bit overrated. Sure, it will limit him at times. I mean, he's not going to be this super physical contested catch guy, whatever, but he doesn't have to be to have, let's say, like a Tyler Lockett type of career, or somebody who's very viable for years and years and years, who can play that finesse game, who can be pretty versatile and explosive. And I think the biggest concern that I have with Worthy, and it's not a huge concern, but at least we should be aware of, that I think caps his upside, is just the fact that he kind of started to regress after a very impressive freshman season. Like, he just has not improved since then. If anything, he's been worse. He's had inconsistencies. We can't really just point to the quarterback play, because it's not like it was great when he was a freshman either. At the end of the day, he has not really taken that step forward, but he was so good as a freshman. We shouldn't be like panicking by any means, I guess, if that makes sense. So his share numbers, they're solid, but it's like, I mean, he only had 5% more target share than AD Mitchell this year at Texas. And, you know, AD Mitchell was a new player getting into that Texas offense. Like, Worthy was not quite dominating in the same way these last two seasons, but I understand there was some health concerns the previous year with the hand. I think he was playing with like a broken hand. Obviously, Quinn Ewers was banged up. There have been some things that go into that production, but even then, the efficiency has taken a hit for Xavier Worthy. So I'm, I guess, very interested in, if you have some of those same concerns, as just the two things I got to bring up with him. Obviously, he does have a good profile all in all.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the size is always going to be a concern, but, you know, the NFL is just getting away from where we even truly need to care about that anymore. You know, like, they're using players differently. We're not looking for, you know, I said that AD Mitchell is that, you know, like, prototypical size, but like, the NFL is not using guys that way. They're not looking or drafting those guys anymore or as often, and they're not using them in that way. You know, like, it used to be, you'd look for who was the best at contested catching. And now that's almost a no-no. Like, you know, if they're good at contested catching, it just means they're unable to separate and they're not going to be that good in the NFL, a la an AD Mitchell. But like with Worthy, it's the complete opposite. He has the ability to separate. He obviously has the top end speed to just burn people, get past them, do all that. Unfortunately, Quinn Ewers was not a good enough quarterback to get the deep ball to him. And there's a lot, you know, like, his catchable target rate isn't good. You know, there's a lot to be said as far as that goes. There's also the argument of he had a broken hand in his sophomore year. I mean, we don't get that much as far as, injury reports and all that kind of stuff. Like, we have no idea how hurt he was, how long was he hurt, like, all that kind of stuff. So, unfortunately, we can't, like, substantiate anything beyond the fact that we've heard reports that he had a broken hand in his sophomore season, and it shows up. He had a worse season. He had more drops than he did in any other year. I mean, so it makes sense, you know, like, it does show up. Whether you want to believe it or not is a completely different story. But I mean, he's a huge yak threat. Like, he hits in all of the metrics, you know, yards per route run, yards per team pass attempt, PPR points per touch, like, market share, everything. He hits in it. So really it boils down to the size concern, and which I'm with you. I think he's probably going to play in like the 170s or maybe even the 180s in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be, well, maybe 180s probably cutting it or, you know, pushing it. But, I think, like, wouldn't be that crazy to see him at like 175 or something like that. At least eventually. But, I think that the size, and then, you know, you have the, like, why didn't you ever grow for, but, you know, the way that I look at it, as far as like as a player, the way I look at it is his freshman year was so good that if he was like a MHJ that barely got on the field, and he had like 200 yards his freshman season, then and then he did what he did a sophomore in his junior year, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But because he was so damn good his freshman year, we go, oh man, why didn't you get better? It was like, well, he was already good. You know, he doesn't have to get better. So, I mean, those are my arguments for it.
And I think that those are fair arguments. It's just to the degree that he really regressed. I mean, his yards per team pass attempt, it like significantly went down. It was like almost three, like as a freshman, which is unheard of. And then it was below two there for his second year and just above two for his third year. So it's like that just is one, you know, meaningful statistic. There's more to than just that. But even the share numbers, just they really did take a downward turn, which is, it's not that he just didn't get better. It's like he got worse. But I'm not saying like he didn't get bad by any means. I'm not saying that. So I think neither you or I can necessarily give all the answers for why that happened. But I mean, maybe a small percentage of that this year, like Quinn Ewers was back being healthy, but insert A.D. Mitchell, and maybe we can transition into A.D. Mitchell. We already touched on him earlier, but like, this is a guy, like you said, with great size, and his testing was great. It's like 99th percentile or something like that from an athletic testing standpoint. But then you watch him play the position and you look at some of like the yak stats, and he's not good after the catch. Like for a guy of that level of athleticism, like you would expect him to be like a big time, big play threat. And really he gets more of his game in that intermediate area, like contested catches, things like that. And I mean, his route running success is strong. Like Matt Harmon of Reception Perception has charted him as very successful basically for all his routes besides post routes. And he has some versatility to his game, but at the end of the day, he just does not really ball out. Like there's some context behind that. Like he's showed up in big clutch games. He really missed all of his second season there at Georgia with injury. Like he did some meaningful things as a freshman, but he never really broke out. He was trending in the right direction in Texas. Like I would have actually been interested to see if A.D. Mitchell, like if he took a big step forward, if he stayed one more year, because like Xavier Worthy was leaving. That's a lot of opportunity, but we know how talented Texas wide receivers are right now. So no guarantees that A.D. Mitchell ever would have stepped up, but another year older, another opportunity for him to dominate like Roma Odunze did. Like Odunze would not have been going nearly as early as talks are this year if he had come out last year. It's just, we hadn't really seen him put it all together. So A.D. Mitchell, yeah, he could be a year away, but do you really want to take that risk when you're looking at him in rookie drafts? Even if he goes in the first round of the NFL draft, it's like there's a sizable risk that he just never gets there. Like his risk or his bust potential is just so high that, you know, it really makes me want to shy away from him as a player.
Yeah. And I mean, I've always been out on A.D. Mitchell. I have to have him higher than I would have given him credit for because of the fact that he's projected to get first round draft capital and he's probably going to end up in a pretty decent landing spot. I think the last mock that I saw had him going to, where was it? I've seen a lot of him going to the Bills and, you know, places like that. And obviously, you know, people would just lose their mind about that, but honestly, he reminds me so much of Terrace Marshall Jr. And you know, like there's a lot of you know, similarities, you know, with the height, the speed, really the numbers, the way that they score their points, a lot of touchdowns in college, and people were really excited about Terrace Marshall Jr. because, you know, he had in his sophomore season, he had only 671 yards, but he had 13 touchdowns, and people like lost their mind about that. And then he comes out, and in seven games, he has 731 yards. Now, mind you, that was the first half of the season where they're usually playing lesser competition and stuff like that. So who knows what would have happened if he had played the rest of the season, but he had 10 touchdowns in those seven games. Well, a lot of times when you hear people that like A.D. Mitchell, you'll hear, oh man, he scored a touchdown in every bowl game he ever played. He scored a touchdown in like this and this and that and whatever. And it's like, take touchdowns out of it. Like touchdowns are the fluky part of the game. You know, so take it out of it. I'm not saying that it's not important for him to have that kind of, you know, ability and you know, be able to score touchdowns. It is important. And it's obviously a part of A.D. Mitchell's game, just like it was Terrace Marshall's. The problem is even though he's this ridiculously fast guy and he's tall and he has leaping ability, he has all this stuff, like, it doesn't show up on the film, it doesn't show up in the numbers, even with Matt Harmon saying that he can separate or he can run these routes, it doesn't show up. Like, he doesn't do it is the problem. Like, maybe he can do it, but he doesn't do it. And Ryan McDowell interviewed him, AD Mitchell, at the combine, and he said that he was taking off routes. He didn't run routes at full speed because he wanted to save himself for the entire game. And I guess, that might lend itself to he has diabetes, so maybe he has to take it easy on certain plays or whatever it might be. All that, like, long-winded way of saying, I just cannot possibly trust him. I just really don't. And he's going to be one of those guys that's always going to go ahead of where I'm willing to take him, because there is a place. I think we did a mock draft on the now Devi University podcast for JWB, and I took AD Mitchell like 206. I'm like, I'm willing to take him there. Like, that's where I feel comfortable taking a guy like that. It's an upside play. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't kill my team, whatever. But I mean, most of the time he's going to go towards the end of the first, right there at the beginning of the second. And there's just players that I'm much more willing to take over him because I just don't feel safe with him. I feel like there's so much risk. I mean, yeah, he can hit. I will never guarantee you he cannot hit, but I mean, he's probably at like maybe a 12% chance of hitting. And I don't want to bet on that at the like late first.
No. Like, the comps that you could say, like, as a ceiling upside play could be, I don't even want to say it, like a Davante Adams style. But the thing is, it's like, he was in the perfect opportunity, Davante Adams, that is, to develop with the great quarterback. And who knows if AD Mitchell is going to be able to do that with some of the concerns we're hearing about him. And at the end of the day, like you said, it's kind of a long shot. So certainly with a good landing spot, maybe he's more like a Gabe Davis. Like, he's going to have those blow up games. He has a propensity for scoring touchdowns, sure. But is he actually going to be usable in a lineup? Like, and I'm not downplaying the idea of, like, in best ball, whatever, but like in the second round of your rookie drafts, sure, maybe take a shot on AD Mitchell. He should not be going in the first, especially not in super flex drafts, that is for sure. But can you trust Brian Thomas Jr.? He said you can't really trust an AD Mitchell. Do you think that Brian Thomas Jr. is much of a better bet?
I think that he's done more in college. And so I will trust him ahead of AD Mitchell. I heard a podcast today. I believe it was Evan Silva from the Establish the Run podcast was talking about BTJ and saying that he's actually having labrum issues. He might have to have surgery. He might play through it, but it's becoming an issue that the NFL is aware of. And because of that, he might fall in the NFL draft, like, whereas he's being projected a lot of times in like the mid to late ish first round of the NFL draft, he might end up falling beyond that. And especially if he gets into like that early-ish second round, now he's not even going to as good of a landing spot, so it could even be like, it could be like double as bad for him, because now not only do you not get the draft capital, which we don't truly care about, but it factors in, of course, but we're not sitting there going, oh my God, if he's not a first round pick, I don't want him, but it matters. But then the more important thing is that, if he goes in the beginning of the second and, you're going to, you're going to one of these teams, like all of a sudden even say the Bears, the Bears take him and now he's, stuck behind DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Like, that's not something that we're going to like be overly excited about. So there's a lot up in the air with Brian Thomas Jr. right now, but as far as can we trust him, I don't know, because he's closer to the like DK Metcalf mold, but I don't ever want to comp anyone to like truly comp anyone to DK Metcalf. But I don't think that he's this like amazing route runner, separator, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, he does one or two things really, really well. And at least in college, he was able to utilize that and show off, his talents for that. I think he can be that in the NFL. I just don't know if it's going to be something that we can truly trust. But like, I comped him personally to a better Gabe Davis, going back to the Gabe Davis thing. Our good friend Levi Valentine actually comped him to DJ Chark. And I actually really like that. And I think his comp's better than mine because A, DJ Chark was a pretty exciting player as a rookie, you know, like around this time and everything. And even then, like he flashed. He had a really good sophomore year in the NFL, but he really just dealt with injury. So like when I say DJ Chark, you might get a bad taste in your mouth, but it's because of what's happened in his NFL career, not necessarily because of his talent and that kind of thing. So taking all the injuries and all that kind of stuff out of it, I do think that DJ Chark is a pretty decent comp.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a very fair comp too. And yeah, Brian Thomas, I mean, yes, he had a good junior season. It wasn't elite, but he was sharing the field with Malik Nabers, which I guess in some ways you could say, well, that's why his stats weren't better. But in other ways, it's like, well, having Nabers outside there, I mean, that takes a lot of pressure off you if you're, you know, you're getting lesser coverage. You're getting easier coverage to beat. And you're also playing with Jaden Daniels, who for LSU had a great season this year. I mean, passing the ball and running the ball. He's going to be a first-round pick, an early first-round pick most likely in this NFL draft. And Jaden Daniels really, you know, allowed Brian Thomas to develop because Brian Thomas, I mean, he was involved as like a sophomore and freshman, but it was not pretty. It was not that explosive. He's really transformed his game and his body. And I really hope that injury doesn't rob him of some of the athletic talent he has. I mean, it seems like he's testing well. So, you know, very athletic testing guy, but there are some concerning things. If you put stock in like the PFF receiving grade, or there are some metrics that just show that he's solid, but not really elite. So even if he gets that first round draft capital, maybe one of those guys that we don't overreact to and say like, he's in the tier with like Nabers and Ojunze or whoever up there. I wouldn't go that far, but this is kind of that area of the draft where you start thinking about running back. Like right now, I don't know if you have I think I know, but I don't know for sure if you have like a clear tier one RB1, like a guy by himself, or are you like me? Do you have a few guys where you're considering for that top spot? I think I actually have a tier of, you know, four guys up there on top.
See, I think this is where your profession is getting in the way of you know what you know, because I know that you know that Jonathan Brooks is the RB1 in the class, but because of what you do and what you've heard and things like that, you're going to take this ACL and say, oh man, he might not be good for 2 years or whatever. But man, every single thing lines up to him being ready for training camp, him being ready for the start of the season. And it was a clean ACL tear. It wasn't one of these like multiple ligamental tears or anything like that. There was no second surgery. There was none of that. So he started right away. And I mean, that's like best case scenario. That doesn't guarantee anything, of course, but I mean, it's best case scenario. He didn't have a lot of times like a Nick Chubb obviously had that a terrible, terrible injury. Multiple ligaments were torn. He does one surgery to clean up one thing. Now they have to wait for the swelling to go down. You wait 2 months. Now you have a second surgery. Obviously, that's going to be a much more delayed process. He didn't have any of that. Clean ACL tear. The doctors are all saying everything went great. He's going to be ready for the start of the season. So let's say he starts off the season slow. That's fine. I'm fine with slow. Let's say the team wants to ease him in. That's fine too. But I mean, we just saw this with Breece Hall last year, where like the team kind of eased him in the beginning. You saw Dalvin Cook getting some touches and people are like, what the hell is going on? Like, why is Dalvin Cook touching the ball? He's getting like 1 yard per carry. And then next thing you know, they literally said like, hey, he's no longer on a pitch count. And all of a sudden he was a league winner, you know? And I think that's what's going to happen with Jonathan Brooks. Jonathan Brooks was the RB1 when he was in Devy. He was the RB1 at the end of the year. Then he got hurt, and we were like, man, what the hell is going to happen? You know, is he going to go early enough in the NFL draft for us to truly care about him? Because once again, for running backs, it really does matter where they land, how early they're drafted. You know, if he gets drafted in the seventh round, man, that's not going to be good. He's still projected to be the first overall running back to be drafted in the NFL draft. He's projected to go towards the end of the second round, and there's even talks that he could go like mid-second round, something like that. So it seems like the NFL is willing to just say like, hey, whatever, ACLs are ACLs nowadays, like who cares? And Like, he has all the talent in the world. He is the RB1. The question is, do you want to deal with the injury and the possible repercussions of that? So I feel like you're letting it sway you a little too much, because I feel like he's the obvious answer. He is the RB1.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I do think that the ACL factors in there, but let's put it this way. Like, there's some classes where it's just super obvious. Like, yep, this guy is just a bona fide stud, like a star. Brooks is not that. Brooks is good. And you know better than anybody else who liked Jonathan Brooks after his freshman season. I was drafting Brooks everywhere. I was very much always a fan. And there have been a lot of people that have been, I guess, slow to come around on him. So I'm glad that you and I both really appreciate Brooks for what he is. And it is a good back. Absolutely. This is just kind of a down class in general. I just don't want to downplay, for example, I have two other guys that I'm really considering there, close to Brooks, and it's Trey Benson and Marshawn Lloyd. Like, those guys, we know that they haven't lost a step. Like, they've tested well. They've been able to bounce back from prior ACL tears, actually, earlier in both of their collegiate careers. They're trending definitely in that right direction. And I think that's similar to Brooks, even more than Brooks. They have more of that workhorse size. They have some receiving abilities to their game. They're not complete backs. They don't have necessarily like the most elite profiles. I mean, nobody really does this year besides, I mean, Jonathan Brooks did have a strong season for Texas, but at the end of the day, I still like Brooks, but that ACL tear, like, he's on track to be starting with full participation if everything goes right at 9 months in August, I believe that is. And I guess I'm just a little bit wary that they're just going to, you know, throw him right into the starting lineup right away week one. Like you said, it might be that slower start. And I do think that there is room for setbacks. We see it every year. Sometimes the rookies get coddled a little bit more than a Breece Hall, who has already kind of done some great things at the NFL level prior to that ACL tear. So at the end of the day, I don't think that Brooks is quite the level of some of those guys who are absolute beasts like Breece Hall, but I still like him. So I don't have any problem with saying that he's the RB1, but I am considering Benson and Lloyd there. I'm curious, you know, if you like those guys next, or if you like Braylon Allen or somebody else amongst the running backs, because I'm starting to sour just a little bit on Braylon Allen. I'm just like, what is going on here? No athletic testing. Maybe I just haven't been paying close enough attention. We just don't have a lot to confirm his athleticism. His top end speed's okay. It's like 20 miles per hour. It's not great. It's not bad for the size, right? I mean, size adjusted, that's good, but that's top end speed. And I just was not seeing a lot of that this last year. He was getting caught from behind, and he's not Derrick Henry. Like, so if you're saying, well, he doesn't need to be super fast. I mean, he's like 240 pounds in that area. I mean, he's really big. Like, I'm getting concerned that he's a little bit too big at this point, and there's not a lot to back up that he has NFL level athleticism, at least to be like a stud. I think he's definitely an NFL player by no means. Do I say that he's not? But I'm curious, do you have Braylon Allen still there, or do you have some other guys ahead of him?
Well, if you remember, and this was, I don't know that we truly talked about this on the pod. We probably should have, but this is something where we were just talking back and forth in our DMs. And somebody posted something. This was like a year ago. Somebody posted something about Braylon Allen being the RB1 in the class. And I was like, man, I just don't see it. Like, I'm okay. I like Braylon Allen, but I don't see him being, even if he has this amazing year or whatever, I don't see him taking the step forward and being the RB1 in the class. And of course, like, I also, that was when we still thought Trevion Henderson was going to be involved. You know, we, like, there was other players that I'm like, you know, I would easily have them ahead, but obviously those players didn't come out. But then obviously Brooks takes a step forward and does all that. So I feel like I was kind of ahead of the game on that one, because people were just like, no, Braylon Allen's a stud, but whatever. I like Braylon Allen, but I don't even have him in my top five. So I think that, but I mean, he's not that far behind. Like, he's really, it's a tier. So, I mean, I'm arbitrarily saying top five, but it's not like it's a cutoff right there or anything like that. He's literally in a tier where landing spot, draft capital, all that kind of stuff is going to matter for me with those players in that tier. Now, Jonathan Brooks is not in that tier. He's much higher for me. And so, like, Brooks is the clear-cut guy. Benson is my RB2 in the class, so I'm right there with you. I like Benson, but he is a tier below Brooks for me. So it's, I feel like, you know, I'm, whereas I want to get Brooks in the first round, like the end of the first round in my rookie drafts. Like I want Jonathan Brooks. I'm willing to trade back and do other things if Benson's on, you know, like the next pick, because like I said, it's a tier break there. So yeah, to answer your question, I do like Marshawn Lloyd. I like Benson. You know, I think that there's more question marks with them than Brooks, even though you might say there was only 1 year of production with Brooks. We can easily explain it away when you talk about Bijan Robinson and all that kind of stuff. Whereas these other guys had to transfer teams, had, you know, had injuries, had other things going on. It's a little more murky with them, even though I do really like them. Like, I like them as players. I'm not trying to act like I hate them or you made bad picks or anything like that. It's just, I mean, there's definitely a lot more question marks with those players, which is why people think that this is a terrible running back class. It's not a terrible running back class. It's just not that normal, clear cut, like, hey, this guy's RB2. Like, that's the difference between a great running back class and a terrible running back class, and I'm doing air quotes, and it doesn't, like, we might have the same amount of good running backs to come out of a great running back class and a terrible one. The difference is you don't know, and I'm saying like the royal you, not you, you don't know that which one it is. And so that's why you say, oh, it's a terrible class, but there's still going to be good players that come out of this draft class.
Oh yeah. And I mean, Jalen Wright, another running back out of Tennessee, like, pretty darn explosive. Like, we don't really know if he has like high end receiving ability and if he could be a bell cow, those types of things. But I mean, he has definitely an argument to be within that top five grouping there. I don't think he has an argument for going at the late first spot, but you know, sometime in the second is very fair game for Jalen Wright. It looks like Hollywood likes that one. I think
big Tennessee fan.
Yeah,
he's a Tennessee fan. So
I figure the Jalen Wright will get him excited. So, but right. No, you know, he's a good player. Maybe not the most complete back, but the way the NFL operates nowadays, you don't have to be this completely well-rounded, do everything type of guy. Like, you just have to be fast, explosive, play within a scheme well. And while we know that he is fast, explosive, and enough size to him, he's an efficient back for sure.
All right, so. At the beginning of the process, and when I say the beginning of the process, I really mean like the end of the college football season. And we're sitting here trying to figure out how are we going to rank these guys? How do we feel about these guys before we like really know anything about like what the NFL thinks of them and all that kind of stuff. I said that I love Kamani Vidal. And then I went to the Senior Bowl. And I fell even more in love with Kamani Vidal. He's been, you know, we've started the show with his promo for months. I didn't do it this time. I probably should have. It was the last time before the NFL draft. I probably should have done it, but I didn't. But then, you know, like I love Kamani Vidal. I thought I was going to be able to just get him in every draft because no one was going to care about him. No one was going to like him, whatever. But man, I tell you what, like, it seems like he's every single person sleeper now. And so like, I don't know if I screwed up by loving him too much and that, you know, moved on to everyone else and like wore off on everyone else, or if, you know, or if it's just like, it was always going to happen. It was inevitable, like Thanos. And, you know, like I was just ahead of my time, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the nice thing about having that analytical approach. It's like, it doesn't take you, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks to be like, wow, this guy is good. I didn't realize that, you know? And yeah, definitely a guy that I've warmed up to a lot. It's like, I mean, I think he's right around that range where it's like, you get Blake Corum, you get Ray Davis, you get Audric Estime, you get Kamani Vidal. Like, those guys are all very viable players around that range as those next running backs up. So I don't mind you mentioning him at all. He is definitely a sleeper. Most, at least if you've just been casually diving into some of these rookies and deeper guys, like maybe you haven't heard a lot about him. Hopefully you can get him in the third round of rookie drafts. Like, that would be awesome, because if you start to have to reach earlier for him, it doesn't feel quite as good. But yeah, certainly a nice player. And those other backs that I mentioned too, very viable. It just depends where they go, like how early they go. Yes. But then also what is that opportunity going to look like?
Yeah, and it's obviously going to depend on how, like, who's in your draft and, you know, how tied in they are and everything. Because I just had that rookie draft that ended, like, earlier this evening, and he didn't go into the fourth round. So, I mean, there's definitely chances that he can go later. But then, I mean, I hear multiple, like, major podcasts and everything talking about him as their guy, this guy that, you know, like, a sleeper, yes, but a guy that they want to make sure that they get and everything. And that is more in the third round, like what you're talking about. Like, if you're saying I have to get this guy, you're probably drafting him in the third round. So I don't think it's that crazy. There's a possibility you can get him in the fourth or maybe even later in some drafts, but I think there's going to be quite a few where you have to take him in the third if you want to get him.
Yeah, no, that's fair for sure. And we've done, you know, a good amount of running back talk here as well. Are there any other, I guess, wide receivers that you really want to talk about in this draft class? Because we've touched on a bunch, but, you know, are there other guys that you wanted to discuss?
We can't leave this podcast or call it quits on this pod without talking about Ricky Pearsall. Like, it just has to happen. It's another one who's just been this huge riser in the process, you know, where he was almost a no-name player that, like, just people had no idea about. And now, I mean, you're talking about, like, there's people pushing him up into, like, the early to mid-second round in you know, their rookie rankings. So I don't disagree with them. Like, I love Pearsall, and it's so crazy because I think it's another one, and it's kind of talking about what we were just talking about with the running backs, where there's a lot of these guys that, for the wide receivers even, that just aren't that clear-cut, normal process of, like, how was your college career? Like, oh, you got a little bit better, you got a little bit... No, it's not that. And unfortunately, with Pearsall, he did not have the greatest quarterbacks basically throughout his entire college career. Now, yes, he had Jaden Daniels, but he had Arizona State Jaden Daniels, which was not Jaden Daniels. Like, he was a completely different player at that point in his college career, and it was not pretty. Then he transfers over to Florida, and he has Anthony Richardson and his 48% completion rate, you know, throwing him the ball. So, of course, his numbers aren't going to look all that good, but the market share was there. There was a lot of things that were standing out, and that's when Beth started picking up on him. Like, man, I'll tell you what, like, it's not perfect, and it's not, like, overly sexy, but Ricky Pearsall's showing up in some of these metrics. And then this year, he gets a little bit better. I don't even want to say better, because I don't think that Graham Mertz is this amazing quarterback or anything like that, but maybe somebody that can actually complete passes. And so, you know, he's used a little bit in the slot. He's like a 60-40 player, 60 slot, 40% outside. So he shows the in and out ability. He shows that he has what it takes to be a wide receiver one for an NFL team. And while, once again, he didn't have these amazing numbers in college, he never had a good quarterback. And so we can kind of explain away why he didn't put up 1,300 yards or whatever. But the market share was there. And that's one of the important things that I go back to with a lot of players. Zay Flowers kind of was the same thing last year, where he had terrible quarterback play his entire college career. But we look at the market share and we go, but you know what? He was the guy. And Ricky Pearsall was the guy basically his entire college career.
Well, you want to talk about sneaky, athletic, lunch pail type of guy. And I'm just kidding. Ricky Pearsall is surprisingly a very good athlete, though. And I think he has good all-around ability. Like, you watch him play and it's like, this dude can play. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but a little asterisk, I guess, with the production coming at 23 years old. It's like the guy's been around 5 years and pretty spotty production leading up to that. So like you said, there's this context around it, but at the end of the day, I sometimes get a little bit hesitant when it's, you know, it takes that long for it to actually happen. His profile is not nearly as extreme as like Xavier Leggett, who's just terrible production his first 4 years. And then he truly breaks out. But, you know, that is something we have to hesitate with. And that's why Ricky Pearsall's price is that low, though. So it's not like you have to pay first round draft capital if he goes, you know, let's say round two in the NFL draft here. Very, very feasible to draft him in like the mid to late second in rookie drafts. Like, yeah, absolutely. Go for it, because there's still upside there. I still think he can be a very good receiver at the NFL level. is he going to be a superstar? I don't know. I do think that there's some risk, but honestly, he's not a bad player by any means. So I think I prefer him to Ladd McConkey. I mean, McConkey, really the only thing that pops with his profile, at least from a statistical standpoint, is yards per route run. But everything else is very, very limited because he's kind of a limited player. But by no means, like, those guys both have good athletic abilities. I'm not writing them off by any means. There's a lot of wide receiver talent once you start going down this list in this draft. It's just a matter of like who's actually going to pop and develop into a good NFL and fantasy threat.
Yeah, I think I'd say that Pearsall and McConkey are going to probably be pretty close to where they go in rookie drafts. Maybe not, you know, but at least that's where I would kind of have them, pretty close. But I do have Pearsall ahead of them because, once again, going back to the whole 60-40 and inside-outside kind of play, like, I believe he can be a weapon that the NFL can use better. Whereas with Ladd, he's just going to be a slot receiver, and like that's great. I'm not hating on slot receivers, but it's just, you know, the upside and the ceiling just isn't there for a player like Ladd, unless he's just the ultimate slot receiver that, you know, like ends up in the best landing spot and just he's the only person that gets targeted and all that kind of stuff. You're just asking for too many things. Where with Pearsall, I mean, he could be a wide receiver one, he could be a wide receiver two, he can be utilized in the slot, he can, you know, move back outside, he can do whatever. And I think, you know, an NFL team is going to fall in love with that. And especially, like you said, he's even more athletic than we thought he was. And so that ended up being a nice surprise when he ran a 4.45, I believe it was, at the NFL Combine. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, this guy's got it. And, you know, I think, once again, I can explain away some of the concerns, even though it's not a perfect profile, of course, fifth-year player and all that kind of stuff. But I can explain away some of it, and so I'm willing to take him. Like you said, I'm not saying he's a first-round pick or anything like that, but, yeah, once we get into the second round and some of those running backs that I really love go, I really have no issues with taking him at that point.
Yeah. Just to get a little bit more talk, I'm just going to rattle off just a couple of wide receivers quick. Just give me your thoughts, maybe on one of them that pops out, or if you have any significant thoughts. We already talked about Jalen Polk. Jalen McMillan, coming from the same school there at Washington. There's Roman Wilson, so he's Michigan wide receiver. Malachi Corley, Western Kentucky. You could even throw like Johnny Wilson, Florida State, or we haven't even talked about like Keon Coleman, Florida State guy, both of those as some more options in this class at wide receiver. Do any of those guys pop out to you?
Not really. I mean, I liked Roman Wilson, but I think it was more of I'm a JJ McCarthy stan, and so like I enjoyed when those two connected and had big plays and all that. But I never truly believed that he was like overly special or anything like that. I felt like he was a fast guy that could get open. And, you know, he goes to the Senior Bowl, and I'm watching him, and yeah, people say that he had this great week. I disagree. Like, I didn't think that he did anything, like, overly special. I'm not saying he had a bad week by any means, but I don't think he did anything that was like, wow, like, this guy is that damn good. And so I don't think that anything jumps off the page with Wilson. He's another older player, you know, fifth-year guy. Yes, there are concerns about like the volume obviously wasn't there for Michigan. And so that's what that people are going to say. Oh, well, if he was on a different offense, he would have had 1500 yards or whatever, but man, we can't guarantee that. And honestly, like, you know, some of the market share numbers and things like that don't really scream that with Roman, you know, even though he was he was basically like the only guy that like truly mattered at Michigan. He only hit a 24% market share. So like being the only guy didn't really matter, you know, like he wasn't like being uber targeted or anything like that. And that tells me that either A, he's not getting open, or, you know, or B, he's just not that great. And so like, I kind of have him in a not that great kind of thing. And then, you know, as far as the other players that you talked about, I don't think that like Jalen McMillan's kind of the same thing. I don't like, he doesn't stand out in any of like the efficiency metrics that I look at. He doesn't seem like an amazing wide receiver. I'm not saying he's bad. I'm not saying he's terrible. He just doesn't seem like anyone that I'm going to be overly excited about. And I know that some of our friends are very excited about Jalen McMillan. So I'm just going to let them take him, and I'll be perfectly fine because I'm going to take Polk probably after him. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it really just depends on what all is going on. But, I mean, Polk is projected to go higher in the NFL draft, so maybe it'll all, you know, solve itself by the time our rookie drafts actually happen. But, you know, it seems like people are torn right now. Do you like Polk? Do you like McMillan? But I really think it should be 100% Polk. And then we can talk about McMillan later on.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. McMillan didn't really give us the best look this year because he was banged up. So it's like, I think that really allowed Jalen Polk as a fourth year guy to really step up and in an offense that was throwing it a lot. So like, there's going to be some efficiency things that carry over from just being in a good offense. And that also boosts Odunze's stock and his production and all that. So, I mean, I don't love Jalen McMillan. We went back and forth. It's like, you know, I was trying to defend him and you were trying to, you know, say he's not that good, and then you ended up being higher on him than me, you know.
I love that kind of stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. So at the end of the day, I think we both feel somewhat similarly, like, yeah, maybe in the third you give a shot on one of these guys and hope that Jalen McMillan, it was just him being banged up this year, like he would have been a lot closer to Odunze. Not saying that he was as good, like some people have almost claimed, very close to claim that, oh yeah, he was just as good as Odunze. It's like, nah, it's not exactly true, but he was better, let's say, prior to this year for sure. But I think Keon Coleman out of that bunch probably sticks out the most for me. But again, not an amazing profile. Like, you go to even Matt Harmon's charting for him, and it's inconsistent. He has to be in the right role. And most of these guys that we talked about have to be in that right role too, because like Roman Wilson, like you said, like he doesn't really grade out as this, like JJ McCarthy, I think, really helped him out just by being so accurate all the time. Like, it's not that Roman was just torching all these guys. It's JJ's accuracy really, you know, helped him out as well. So I think that group of wide receivers there, I tend to start going more with running backs at that part of the draft, unless there's a guy who's really falling or lands in a great spot, just because you never know which one of these third round running backs could hit. So sometimes you'll see some of these wide receivers fall, like if Javon Baker or maybe we talk about Ricky Pearsall, they're falling into the third. That's great. But typically there's some running backs who can fall into that range, which end up being interesting options there too.
Yeah, and I think all of those players that you just touched on are kind of what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, those are the players, one of them is probably going to get better draft capital than we're expecting, and he's going to move up boards because of that. And that's where we were talking about earlier. Don't do it. Just don't do it. You don't have to take him. Take a running back. Trade out of it. Do whatever. Don't take that guy. You know, Keon Coleman was a sleeper that I really liked going into the season. And then he had that week one against LSU, 3 touchdowns. I mean, looked unstoppable. And I'm like, well, he's not a sleeper anymore. You know, like he's just going to be amazing. But we didn't know how bad LSU's defense was at that point. So, you know, like we knew it was probably not the greatest, but like we didn't realize it was really bad, like really, really bad. They had to score like 70 points a game just to stay in games, which is half the reason why they had the prolific, you know, year that they did. But they, I think after that, he just completely kind of fell off the face of the planet. Obviously, he lost his quarterback later in the season and everything, but I don't think he has the route running ability, which, you know, Matt Harmon touched on, obviously, or you talked about Matt Harmon, you know, saying as well. I don't think he has that. He's more of a contested catch guy, which, like I said earlier, you know, the NFL is getting away from. So he went from a sleeper to, like, people started pushing him up, and, you know, he's still being talked about being drafted, like, late first, early second in the NFL draft. And I'm like, nope, I'm out, man. Like, I want nothing to do with that. I'm not taking him in the second round, you know, of my rookie drafts, especially like the early second. I'm not doing it. You know, like as much as I would have liked, it's one of those players where it's like, yeah, if you're talking about the third round, I'll take him all every day of the week. But, you know, when we're talking about the second, and especially like getting in the early, there's people, maybe not as much now, but there was people that were pushing him into like the late first, earlier in the rookie process or whatever. I'm like, man, I can't do it. I just can't do it, as much as I would have liked to have had him or drafted him as a sleeper, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. And for sure, quarterback accuracy and willingness to throw to a guy like Keon Coleman factors in. So, having big games against LSU, like you said, and even Clemson, roasting Clemson was impressive for sure early in the season, but definitely a guy who's faded down the stretch. I think there's some hope that you could get him in the third, which, like you're saying, that was not a possibility there months ago. That's for sure with Keon Coleman. But any other guys you want to mention here? I know we haven't really talked about the quarterbacks. We've talked about them so much in the past. I don't know if we really wanted to prioritize them as much, but Caleb Williams right at the top makes sense. After that, you kind of pick your order there. I mean, I think both you and I still really like Drake May. I'm hoping the Minnesota Vikings find a way to trade up for May, but we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, Jaden Daniels being there, JJ McCarthy. I mean, those are the top four guys, and you can really argue at it from a million different ways. And I don't know that we're going to convince you one way or another, but just know that their profiles are very promising. All of them could be very good NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a person that likes to have a strong opinion about everything. You know, like I don't even like to, but I just generally do have a strong opinion about most things, but I really don't care which one of the four you like best, second, third, fourth, whatever. I don't care, as long as those are your four. And as long as you're willing to take those four, you know, within, let's say, the first half of your rookie draft, or, you know, right around there, close enough to it, like definitely not beyond like a 108 or something like that. And unless something crazy happens, then I'm on board. I'm fine. Like, I'm really not going to sit there and argue with you. It's when people try to push up a Michael Penix Jr., a Bo Nix into that first round conversation of rookie drafts. I don't care if Bo Nix goes 12th overall. I really don't. I don't care if Michael Penix Jr. goes 31st overall or wherever the hell he's going to go. I don't care, because they're backup quarterbacks. They are backup, a la a Kenny Pickett. Just because he got drafted, I think it was like, 18th overall, 17th, whatever the hell it was, to the Steelers, did not make him a good quarterback. Like, it made him, you can have the value argument of, oh, well, now people are going to draft him. People are willing to pay up for him because he's a starting quarterback for, you know, NFL team, blah, blah, blah. How'd that work out for everyone? You know, not very well. So unless you're able to actually take advantage of that value, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make him a better player. Bo Nix is, even though we've seen that he maybe has even the ability to like push the ball down the field and all that, he doesn't do it. And so, you know, he has like a 5.88 ADOT, and he doesn't push the ball down the field. So unless he's just throwing the ball to Christian McCaffrey every play, which they're not going to draft him, you know, for the 49ers. So unless he's doing something like that, or like Austin Eckler goes in a time machine and all of a sudden, you know, like that's it, then I don't think it's going to work out for Bo Nix. And then Michael Penix Jr., it just isn't good. he's not bad. He's just not good. And that's why I really think he's going to be, I consider both of them like a high-end backup. They're guys that can go out and not lose a game for you and do things like that for NFL purposes, but they're not going to be good for your fantasy teams for long periods of time. Once again, maybe they'll get you a game or two, you know, just like a Pastrnak got you last year, but then they're going to fall apart at some point because they're not that good. So that's really my whole thing, is like, I feel like people kind of want to make it a big six, and it's not. It's a big four, and then there's two high-end backups that, I'm not saying they won't ever score points for your team or whatever, but I'm saying they're not going to be consistent fantasy options that you need to invest in, and do not draft them in the first round of your rookie drafts.
There you go. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as like, they have, like, they belong in the NFL, but that doesn't mean that they're starters. Like Michael Penix Jr., he could be like the Teddy Bridgewater, right? I mean, that he kind of would fill in well in a role like that. And I think that Bo Nix could be your Sam Darnold or, you know, something like that. But I'm just, yeah, not overly high on those guys. And Spencer Rattler will be thrown out there. Kind of same deal there. A lot of tools, but really, I mean, he'd have to go to like some sort of QB guru and really turn his whole career around. So I don't see that happening.
That's just take lock, man. Like people want Spencer Rattler to be a thing, and he's not. He's just not a thing. And I mean, take away everything that's ever happened in Spencer Rattler's college career and just talk about the fact that he's literally 6 feet tall. And if it was any other quarterback in this process and they were 6 feet tall, people would hate them. If JJ McCarthy was 6 feet tall, people would be like, I hate this guy. He's never going to be good, blah, blah, blah. But Spencer Rattler was terrible in college, a fifth-year player, and 6 feet tall. And people are like, no, 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 give this guy a chance.
Yeah, we probably don't need to do that. One guy that we did snub that before we head out, I guess, for the night, is Troy Franklin. We did not talk about Troy Franklin, Oregon wide receiver, at all. And maybe that's because he's like, he's good. He's not in that top tier. He's not a low tier guy. Like he's definitely somebody you could consider in the late first, but you don't feel maybe excited about it. Any last thoughts with Troy Franklin? I guess I'll start with just the fact that I think he's solid, but he's not the most physical guy. He's not the most well-rounded guy. His frame, I mean, it's lean, but we talked about it earlier. Like, okay, guys like that can play in the NFL nowadays. What do you think about Troy Franklin out of Oregon?
I don't have, once again, like truly strong opinions about Franklin. I like him. I don't love him, but the one thing that I kind of picked up on, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, a month ago, something like that, is everyone thinks that Rome Odunze is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Once again, he would have been the wide receiver one in any draft class ever. But Rome Odunze played 15 games last year because they obviously went to the national championship. Because of that, he had 1,600 yards. Troy Franklin played an extremely similar schedule to Rome Odunze, with a quarterback that never threw the ball down the field because he was, you know, dinking and dunking. I mean, and obviously he threw it down the field a little bit, but I mean, 98% of the time he was dinking and dunking the ball. And yet Troy Franklin had extremely similar numbers to, I want to say he had right around 1,300 yards receiving, playing the same defenses and everything else with probably, I mean, I don't want to say a worse quarterback, because I feel kind of the same way about Penix Jr. and Bo Nix. So like, not necessarily a worse quarterback, but just not the quarterback that's pushing the ball down the field and making these big plays for Franklin. And yet Franklin was pretty damn close to Odunze's numbers, efficiency numbers, yards per reception, like all that kind of stuff. So when it's all said and done, I don't really have Odunze and Franklin all that far apart from each other. So it's not that. And people hear that, I'm like, oh, well, you really like Franklin. I'm like, no, I really just don't like Odunze all that much. So, like, once again, like, they're not players that I love. They're not players that I hate. They're in that kind of, like, middle tier where I'm like, they could hit for an NFL team, especially if they get a great landing spot or whatever. I don't know that I love them. Like, I have to have them on my team. I don't feel that way about either one of them.
That's fair. And we could rewind to the point where it's like, well, Rome Odunze stayed for that fourth year and Troy Franklin is a early declaree. So he only has 3 years of data. And basically he was more impressive than Odunze was last year. So I think that at the end of the day, you can say, well, I mean, you could put all these hypotheticals out there, like if he would have declared a year later, or this or that. But at the end of the day, Troy Franklin is trending in the right direction. He's an athletic guy. I'm not too concerned about that frame. I'm still open to drafting him in the late first, early second range.
Yeah, and he's kind of become the player that's been forgotten about. You know, like they're just people are kind of like, whatever. Give me A.D. Mitchell, give me Ricky Pearsall, give me whoever. And it's like, well, just don't forget about Troy Franklin, because like, while I'm not saying that he's a top tier guy or whatever, he's one of those middle guys that sometimes they just hit, you know, and he has a better shot of hitting than an A.D. Mitchell, in my opinion, you know? So like, don't forget about Troy Franklin. Do not take Adonai Mitchell ahead of him unless there's some extreme circumstance, which, you know, like I don't think is going to happen.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, sometimes looking at these metrics will do. It'll help you get a better shot, a better probability of hitting on a player. So that's not to say that, you know, AD Mitchell can't hit, or that Troy Franklin is guaranteed to, but there's definitely a lot more confidence you can see in a future in the NFL for a Troy Franklin of the world, for sure. And there are aspects to his profile that, like, Matt Harmon, for example, really likes. I know we've referenced him in his film work a little bit tonight to get some further analysis on these wide receivers. Like, yes, he's not super physical, and that was the big knock on the film and some of his success, but at the end of the day, he has a lot of the tools. He has the route running abilities and the speed and all that stuff. So probably enough time spent on Troy Franklin, but hey, we thought we couldn't forget him.
No. And I mean, and of course, people made the same argument about Tank Dell last year. You know, they've made the same argument about other players, that just because it's not part of their game, it's like, oh, well, it's a negative. Well, what if they don't need to be physical? You know, like, what if they're able to get away from a defender without actually pushing them out of the way or knocking them down or whatever? Like, not everyone has to be an asshole and try to knock over every player like George Pickens. You know, like, you can actually just, like, juke them and go do something else. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like Jordan Addison, and, you know, it just can start naming off more and more guys every year now that are less on that physical side and more on the finesse. And
Amari Cooper, I mean, going back years, like, is Amari Cooper, like, truly, like, out physically guys, if that's a word even? Like, he's
always been, like, so good at that, you know, just nuance of the game, the route running, the craftsmanship.
His route running is amazing. The people, like, he's probably one of the most underrated players in like the NFL right now. I mean, obviously he's getting older and stuff like that, but I mean, he's been one of the most underrated players for years. Like, watching him play football is just fun, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I love route runners, but I mean, watching Amari Cooper just get away from someone, but he's not touching them. He's not pushing them. He's not knocking them over. He's not doing any of that. I'm not saying Troy Franklin is that by any means. I'm just saying, like, there's other ways of playing football. Everyone does it differently. Like I said, George Pickens does it his way, and sometimes it works. A lot of times it doesn't. But, you know, like, Troy Franklin can do it his way, and it can still work.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of these prospects. They can win in a lot of different ways, and they have different skill sets. Just remember going into the NFL draft this week, just talent. Remember back to the talent. Remember back to the guys' red flags in their profile before, you know, maybe falling for that big time draft capital, or maybe we need to react if a guy really, really drops off the map. Why is that? We're going to get some more, I guess, news, some more fallout from the draft here, and we're excited to see what's ahead.
Yeah. And just because we haven't talked about a single tight end, I don't want to talk about Brock Bowers. That's all anyone talks about. And I mean, like, he's, you know who Brock Bowers is at this point, but Jatavion Sanders has been a player that we've been pretty high on for a couple years now, and he didn't have the most amazing combine. His RAS score isn't all that great, so people are like, "Up, oh, well, you know, I don't like him anymore because of his RAS score." You know, like, because we've seen how much that matters. But how are you feeling about JC Sanders? Like, where are you willing to, like, start considering him at the very least?
Yeah, I would consider him in the mid to late second. I know it's kind of a cop out, but it's like tight end premium. Sure, bump him up a little bit. Otherwise, I mean, probably not till the late second or so. It's not because I hate him. I think he's very solid. I just think that there's so many solid NFL tight ends out there, unless you're really, really desperate drafting for need, which I typically don't recommend. You might want to go after Sanders then. But yeah, I think he's a viable tight end, certainly a wide range of outcomes as far as, like, he could be very good in the NFL. You don't have to be like that elite athleticism. I think he has good enough athleticism to be like a tight end one. It's just how high end of a tight end one will he actually be. But, you know, his price has fallen down to a point where it's very palatable, and I don't think that we need to overreact and say, like, he's a trash athlete. He's just not maybe quite what some of us thought he was going to be, I guess, when he was a Debbie darling there.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it just boils down to the 40 time. Like, people are like, oh, well, he didn't run a 4.5, so I don't like him anymore. And it's like, well, I mean, the 40 time's cool and all, but that's not the only thing that matters. You know, like, we just, we can't see the Jalen Weidemeyer 5.0 time. You know, like, we can't have that. But I can deal with the 4.65 with a huge guy like a JT Sanders, you know. And I wrote an article, like, I don't know, about a month ago or so at DynastyLeagueFootball.com. And I honestly, I was looking at the article was all about the end of the second round. Like, you know, what are we looking for at the end of the second round? And I went back and looked at, you know, the past few years, what has been like the good strategy, the best strategy that you can utilize. And honestly, it's tight ends. Like, it really has been tight ends. Now, obviously, every draft class is different. I'm not saying that just because it worked the past couple ones or the past, you know, two or three, that it's going to work this year and it's going to be, you know, whatever. Nothing's guaranteed, especially at the end of the second round. But I mean, it really was like, it was Pat Freiermuth a few years ago. Then it was Sam LaPorta, you know, not Dalton Kincaid, because he was going earlier. Sam LaPorta, Trey McBride, like players like that are going like in the mid to late second, and that's kind of where you want. Or a lot of times it was, you know, if you don't want to go after that tight end, it was really trade out of that area. But I feel like JT Sanders is that 210. Like, that's where he gets, you know, drafted. Like, that's where you should really be drafting him. And nothing's truly changed. Like, that was a month ago. You know, that was actually I guess it was it post combine? I don't remember now. It was either, I don't know. Time flies when you're old, but it might have been even before the combine. But regardless, nothing has truly changed for me. He's still like that 210 for me. So I just kind of wanted to put it out there, because there's been a lot of talk of Ben Sinatz, the tight end, to Cade Stover and this and that. I'm like, JT Sanders is still the tight end too, like pretty much by a country mile for me. And so I just want to be very clear. Take JT Sanders at 210.
Yeah, that's fair. I am with you there on Jatavion Sanders. That's for sure.
All right. Well, I mean, we didn't touch on every player, but we talked about quite a few, and it was nice getting back into the rookie game for a little bit, kind of like our send off for these players. I'm going to be heading out to Detroit at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning, and I'm going to be hopefully enjoying all of that. And I cannot wait, because it's going to be like, it's being predicted to be like one of the most offensive oriented drafts in like the longest time. So it's going to be one of those fun ones where like every other pick is a wide receiver, quarterback, running back, whatever. So like, I cannot wait to do that. I can't wait to see all these picks be made. These players get positions and or not only positions, but, you know, but landing spots and everything. I love this time of year. It's obviously, you know, exciting for us with our dynasty leagues, Debbie leagues, C2C leagues, whatever. So I cannot wait. And I don't know. I keep stopping myself from buying a Jahmyr Gibbs, the black and blue, the new alternate jerseys that they have, because they're so sexy looking. And I love Jahmyr Gibbs, but I'm not a Lions fan. But I was like, hey, I'm going to be in Detroit. But I'm like, do I really want to spend $200 on a jersey that I'll probably only wear a handful of times or whatever? So I was like, yeah, I don't know, but I really kind of love it though. I think I'm gonna do it.
That'd be a fun thing to buy. Enjoy your time there, John. Definitely deserve to just enjoy all the football conversations and that experience. That's for sure.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe I'll get some interviews, maybe I'll, you know, get some videos for us, maybe I'll get a new Debbie devotional promo, you know, maybe I can talk to Kamani again, you know, and get, like, once he's on a team, and we can say, hey, this is Kamani Vidal from the Los Angeles Chargers, and, you know, you're listening to the Debbie devotional, like that kind of thing, but we'll see.
Let's try to get Jonathan Brooks RB for the Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, yes, that would be... That's the goal. I think everyone has that as the goal, you know, like that's, and that's where he's actually projected to go. So another feather in his cap for the RB1, but enough about that. We appreciate you guys listening. It was a lot of fun diving back into the rookies. We're going to get back into that Debbie game on the next pod, Debbie, C2C, all that kind of good stuff. But for now, we're going to go ahead and cash out. We will see you guys later.